From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the governor and leaders from around the state gather to talk and prepare for future storms. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a new poll showing Governor Cuomo 30 points ahead of his Republican challenger. And the group Elected Officials to Protect New York urges the governor to continue a moratorium on hydraulic fracturing. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo gathered local leaders from around the state to talk about reaction to past storms and to plan for the next ones. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Cuomo invited government leaders from Long Island, the North Country, Central New York, and other locales who experienced damage from Hurricanes Irene, Lee, and Sandy. They gathered to praise their past efforts to react to storms and to report on steps they are taking to prepare for future disastrous weather events. Representatives from Long Island spoke of creating offshore sand barriers, while a Madison County leader told how they decided to move the county highway garage to higher ground. Others say they are rebuilding flood-damaged areas with green space, with walking and bike paths. Dennis Wilson is from the village of Fort Plain in Montgomery County, which was devastated by flash flooding just last summer. He says the village has to rethink development and allow wider areas near creeks and rivers to absorb water overflow.
About how we can provide sufficient floodplain so that when the waters rise again in Fort Plain and the other surrounding communities that are on the riverfront, there's a place for the water to go.
Governor Cuomo says the more frequent storms are leading to a change of attitude about wetlands and their value.
We saw a wetland as a waste of space, right? Here's a wetland, let's develop it. Because it's just a wetland and is serving no purpose.
As a result, he says many wetlands have been filled in by development. He says when Superstorm Sandy flooded parts of Lower Manhattan, the high water lines almost exactly coincided with the borders of the original island wetlands that have been filled in by buildings over the past 300 years.
Hurricane Sandy covered all the fill areas right up to the original line of the island. She knew where she was going. She was going where she had been. We were encroaching on her territory. Well, we can tame Mother Nature. We can build big fill sites. No, you can't. You think you can, but you can't.
Cuomo praised leaders in Staten Island, who he says have permanently relocated many homes in order to create a wetlands border. While there was much talk of Mother Nature and her effect on storms, there was little discussion of the climate change that many scientists believe is causing the more frequent and destructive weather. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio was one of the few to acknowledge the changes. He says the common sense preparations that are now routine would have seemed alarmist even 20 years ago.
We don't get a memo that tells us when the next storm's going to hit.
De Blasio is seeking legislation to offer temporary property tax abatements to storm victims who have rebuilt and seen their tax bills go up. He says he's optimistic that it will pass the Assembly and Senate this session. After the event, Governor Cuomo commented on reports that the federal government may try to take back $1 billion of the $3.5 billion remaining in a Sandy relief package. Cuomo says he and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie worked hard to win that money.
Frankly, a lot of the members of the Congress didn't support that funding. It's kind of ironic that now that after they didn't support it, they're trying to come and poach it.
Cuomo says it would be disingenuous to use the money for something else. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week we saw a Siena College poll which showed Governor Andrew Cuomo 30 points ahead of his Republican challenger, Rob Astorino, and you had a long conversation with Astorino this week. Among other things, he said he thinks he can win based on his prior election.
Well, that's right. I mean, here's a guy, Astorino, who won in Westchester County with a 2-1 Democratic majority, who just can't be told he can't do the same thing as governor. When I said to him, but you're 30 points behind, he said, yeah, I was 30 points behind in Westchester also. I said, well, he's got over $30 million. He'll probably have $50 million when he begins. And he said, yes, but you can't basically argue with the truth. You can't argue with the fact that taxes are still way too high in New York, no matter what he says he's tried to do. And that's number one on an awful lot of people's list. He said that, you know, money just can't buy it all. You know, to me, it looks something like a suicide mission. Now we hear news that there's a third party possibility here, and that the Working Families Party is so mad at Cuomo's newfound conservatism that they might put a candidate up themselves. And when you do that, the polls are telling us that instead of Astorino being 30 points behind, he's only 15 points behind. So you had better believe that there are things that would make the Working Families Party negotiate with the Cuomo people over this, either informally or at arm's length, because there are laws about getting people to run or not run. And it may well be that the Cuomo people promise something to the Working Families Party after Cuomo wins his second election, presumably in a big way. So the way it seems to me is Astorino is a personable, bright, nice guy. Of course, he has a lot of the right-wing trappings. He resents being called a Tea Partier. But, you know, when things like Right to Life and others are concerned, he is what he is. And so the real question is, do taxes trump everything else when it comes to this election? Are New Yorkers so angry that they're willing to say, well, you know, Cuomo, he's done all these things by limiting taxes in New York, but it's not enough. We have to have more, and therefore we want Astorino. Or is it going to turn out that Astorino is really a little late to the tax game where Cuomo has gone first and all that money? And believe me, those ads are already playing from friends of Cuomo one way or the other. If you go into an election with $50 million and you want to spend any large part of it, boy, it's going to be very tough. You won't be able to turn a radio or television program on without seeing a Cuomo ad.
He also talked extensively about hydrofracking, although he didn't like fracking. He called that the F word, and he said exploration for natural gas, and he seems bent on, if he was elected, moving forward on this.
David, he cited a strange ally for a conservative Republican. He cited the President of the United States, who, as you know, has been touting fracking for quite a while. Strange bedfellows. But I suppose you take your help where you can get it. He says, look, if you really want to talk about economic revival for upstate New York, this is the way to do it. And, you know, he clearly is for those who want fracking. It is a major divisor for upstate voters. As you know, it sort of floats right down the middle. If you're looking for votes, it may be one way of getting them. There are a lot of things happening in the world right now, including the Russians and all of the natural gas that they have and other oils. It may well be that that plays into the hands of those people who want to frack. I don't care if he calls it the F word or anything else. The fact of the matter is fracking is fracking. It goes down into the ground. There are many studies going on as to whether when you go below the water table, which is what he's claiming, you're safe. But, of course, you have to come back through the water table one way or another. The potential for accidents is there. And there is always the idea that you shouldn't do anything until you know what you're doing. And there does seem to be a lot of feeling that we don't know yet. He cites the fact that other states have done it and done it apparently without problems. Of course, there are those people in the anti-fracking movement who deny all of that and who point to some horror stories. The health commissioner, who was studying this thing to death, because I think we all know that Andrew Cuomo got a little frightened by this thing, Cuomo being a guy who was for it in the beginning, is studying it, and Commissioner Shah, a very good man, for some reason leaves to go to Kaiser in California, and the question now is, do you have to start the studying all over again?
Well, this week marked a deadline, Alan, for casino applications. $1 million fee just to put your proposal forward and a number popping up at the last minute. Casinos and economic development, do they work?
Casinos are having a rougher time, we know that. With more casinos come the people who are available to go to them, it gets divided up and diluted. And if we're going to have several casinos in New York, many of the people who would go to those casinos ordinarily are already used to going to other ones, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Massachusetts is putting up more casinos too. So we really don't know the answer to your very good question as to whether or not there will be too many, because there are just so many people. Then what happens is you start to get, as you did with the lottery, people saying, hey, you know, you got to play to win. And then the state or the people, state-sanctioned advertising starts to happen. That would be disgraceful because the potential for making people go or encouraging them to go in order to balance the budget will always be there. And we do know that addictive gambling is a big problem. Now, it may not be that the state is paying for the ads that will inevitably show up, but one wonders whether or not there ought to be a law about what you can do, because we are going to have this big problem with people who just can't stop gambling. It is to them what alcohol is to some and sex is to another. It is just a real big problem.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Green Group elected officials to protect New York this week released copies of local resolutions from municipalities around the state urging Governor Andrew Cuomo to continue the de facto moratorium on hydraulic fracturing. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The resolutions released over the last several months, for the most part, recommend increasing investment in renewable energy, noting the success of the New York Sun Initiative and growth in electric vehicle charging stations. New Paltz Supervisor Susan Zimmet, speaking at a press conference at the Capitol in Albany, says her community is pursuing a number of solar and renewable energy initiatives.
As a university town, we clearly see the importance of creating a thriving renewable energy future in New York State. And New York State is poised to invest in renewables and become a leader in the nation, creating good long-term jobs for our youth here at home.
Gloversville City Supervisor Greg Young believes fracking job numbers don't hold up in reality, and the jobs largely go to out-of-state workers, which may be just as well.
And given the dangerous exposure to silica sand and dust used in fracking, and many explosions and blowouts show the inherent dangers of this technology. These are not good jobs. They're not the jobs you'd want your family members taking. They're not long-lasting, and they're not sustainable. That's why we're eager for actual good jobs in rapid-growing industries like solar and wind.
Young would rather see New York tap its strong research universities to create opportunities for youth in solar, wind, and efficiency technologies, and attract innovative companies into the state. Coming from the opposite direction, Unshackle Upstate is calling for New York to lift the fracking moratorium. Brian Sampson is the group's executive director.
Given that today is Earth Day and everybody is concerned about the environment, the use of high-volume hydraulic fracturing to develop the Marcellus Shale is an important step for New York to continue to improve its environment. Natural gas is much cleaner to burn than coal. We can use it in our homes, our businesses. We can ultimately even put it in our cars when we retrofit those engines. So from our perspective, it's an environmentally smart thing to do. But also from an economic standpoint as well, the people of the Southern Tier continue to see massive amounts of job loss and population loss. And this has the opportunity to spur tremendous economic opportunity in the Southern Tier, and we need the governor to understand that this is his prerogative, it's his ability to move this issue forward, and we ask him today on Earth Day to dedicate New York to developing the Marcellus Shale.
Fracking in New York has been on hold under a de facto moratorium for almost 7 years, with polls showing the public split on the issue. Documents released earlier this month appear to show a wide-ranging ongoing evaluation of fracking by the state, but with Health Commissioner Dr. Nirav Shah leaving his post in May, it's unclear what the next steps could be. A Cuomo administration official says fracking remains under evaluation.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
An energy company that is submitting a proposal to the New York State Public Service Commission for a major power line project appears to have allayed one major concern. And while community groups praise the utility's move, they say they are not completely at ease and have other worries. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
There is an AC or alternating current transmission proceeding underway, and developers are working on proposals for high voltage transmission line upgrades. One of the utility companies putting forth a proposal is National Grid. Here's spokesman Patrick Stella.
We've done some engineering now that really makes it, it's not a necessity now for us to do any land acquisition, which really takes eminent domain right out of the picture for this particular project.
Ned Sullivan is president of Poughkeepsie-based environmental group Scenic Hudson, part of the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition.
This is a very positive step forward.
He notes the initial announcement from National Grid about taking eminent domain off the table came via an article last week in a Columbia County-based newspaper, the Register Star. Ian Solomon heads up Farmers and Families for Claverick, a group of local residents that is also part of the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition.
We would just make sure to point out, you know, lest anyone get too excited about it, that they've made a verbal commitment, but there really is no legal backing behind it. And there is, you know, the language really still would allow them the freedom to go ahead and use it anytime they felt that there was a need.
National Grid is one of several New York transmission owners forming a coalition known as Transco. Stella says that while the National Grid project is indeed part of Transco, taking eminent domain off the table applies only to National Grid's 153-mile portion of the project, running from outside the Utica area to Pleasant Valley in Dutchess County. Again, here's Scenic Hudson Sullivan.
This is consistent with what Governor Cuomo has called for and the policy preference that the Public Service Commission has indicated will guide its review of these competitive proposals. So we're pleased that one of the companies has stepped forward and indicated that it will indeed comply with the governor's policy preference as expressed by the Public Service Commission.
Both Sullivan and Solomon say they are concerned about National Grid's proposed tower design. Some towers would be narrower than existing structures, but at 130 feet would measure 40 feet higher. Solomon says that could negatively impact cultural tourism and historical resources.
And when you have the possibility, as we've just heard about, of towers that will rise 50 feet above the tallest tree, it doesn't become such a great place to get away to in the country anymore. And that, you know, that takes dollars directly out of the economy.
Here's National Grid Stella.
And as I said, you know, we're still continuing to do engineering. So we may be able to get those tower heights down, based on further engineering studies that we can do. But, you know, this is the project is to remove congestion and to try to add megawatts to the system. So, to do that in this particular case, in order to stay in the right of way, you know, there are cases where we would have to put in a taller tower to accommodate that.
Earlier this year, the Public Service Commission directed administrative law judges overseeing the proposed projects to establish a process by which competing developers could submit new or modified proposals that make greater use of existing transmission corridors. The PSC's change followed Governor Andrew Cuomo's call for expediting transmission projects that fall within existing rights of way. Such submissions would come in Part B of the proceeding, and the date for these submissions has yet to be announced. Stella says National Grid intends to stick with its initial 153-mile proposal. Solomon is wary.
We don't want to express mistrust. We don't want to be adversarial, but we can't let people be lulled into feeling that everything is safe and secure because of some really smart PR.
Stella notes that eliminating the use of eminent domain, along with some other changes, came about in large part because of input from residents, lawmakers, and regulators.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. A new report has been issued on the economy of Essex County, New York. While it indicates the year-round population is declining and Essex County is moving toward a tourism-based economy, most of the data doesn't surprise the region's economic leaders. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was in the North Country and filed this report.
The 36-page Essex County Profile, The People, Homes, and Economy of Essex County, New York, was issued by the Blue Line Group in Saranac Lake. It provides data for population, housing, and the economic sectors of the rural Adirondack County. The report finds that Essex County's median age is about 45, and there will be a minor decline in population of about 1.3% between 2010 and 2040. Healthcare and social assistance is the largest industry, but the accommodation and food services sector provide the greatest number of jobs. The Adirondack Futures Project is developing multiple future scenarios for the Adirondack Park. Co-director Dave Mason says parts of the report have been commonly known and appeared in other reports.
The county's in pretty good shape relative to the rest of the North Country. Population's held up, housing prices have held up, incomes have held up. You know, we're lacking rental housing in a lot of towns. Our population skews older. Well, that's true. They've got lots of statistics on the employment picture. It shows growth in tourism and healthcare. So there's pieces of it that are doing quite well. It's variable. There's parts that aren't doing so well and other parts that are doing just fine.
The principal for the Blue Line Group was traveling and unavailable for an interview. Lake Placid-based Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism President Jim McKenna explains that the Essex County profile was not produced for any group, but was issued as a vehicle to show what the Blue Line Group can produce. McKenna found it intriguing as it separated the county-specific data.
I get motivated with information like this. It's already been helpful, and I've used it in a couple of different situations. When it identifies that in many areas, because of the hospitality industry, our numbers are a little more positive than the rest of the North Country, that certainly sort of backs up some of the things that Roost has been saying, number one. Number two, it helps us really identify areas that we have to pay more attention to. We have a special place that won't necessarily fit standardized models, and I think that this helps us establish that.
Town of Moriah Supervisor Tom Scazzafava chairs the Essex County Board of Supervisors Finance Committee. He says the data in the report is not unexpected. The population has been between 38 and 40,000, and median age has held steady for years.
Within the Adirondacks, as we've been saying since the inception of the Adirondack Park Agency, and I'm not shooting arrows at the agency, but we are different than the rest of the state. And it's been very difficult, if not impossible, to attract any industry into the area. Tourism-related jobs are jobs, and they're needed, obviously, but we also need some year-round jobs here that can pay a decent wage. The focus has become, through the years, more of the business of job retention. You know, we used to focus on job creation, and now it's just keeping what we have.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1417. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.